Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this Thursday edition of Today's Issues here on AFR, American Family Radio. We thank you for listening. Wherever you may be tuned in across the good old U.S. of A, along our 184 radio stations that belong to American Family Radio, I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Walker Wildman.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Fred Jackson, News Director for American Family News and OneNewsNow.com. Good morning, Fred.
Great to be here with you again.
Well, Fred, a lot of things happening in our nation's capital right now, true?
Yeah, I would like to make a petition right now that I have three TV screens in my office so I can watch everything that's going on. We're just talking about before we went on there. You know, a lot of people think there is one hearing room for these confirmations of President-elects. There's three simultaneously going on right now. One is General Mattis, Secretary of Defense. And we can talk about that in a minute because I'm just tuning into some of the questions being asked by Democrats. Also, Ben Carson, housing.
Dr. Ben Carson.
Dr. Ben
Carson.
Yeah, Dr. Ben Carson. And Mike Pompeo, for CIA director. So all of these are happening simultaneously. So that's why I was going to suggest three screens in my office.
And I didn't know that. I didn't know these were all going on at the same time.
Yeah, one for hockey, one for football, one for news. <You're> Something like that.
Walker, are we running our Facebook page today?
Yes, we're on Facebook Live. Okay. And as soon as we get into the news of the day, I'll be posting the articles on Facebook.
Facebook Live, as opposed to Facebook what?
Dead.
Dead? Yeah. Okay. You don't want to be on that.
No, you don't.
You don't want
I
to be
don't.
On. No, I don't want to
you
be
know,
on.
I've read Facebook has this feature where it either notifies your friends if someone has passed away or in an emergency situation like a mass shooting or something, you can like verify that you're okay. And so anyways,
well, what could go wrong?
That's what's happened.
Dangerous. That's dangerous.
They've had it send out an alert saying I'm not okay or something or so and so's passed away, and it's not true.
Oh yeah,
people. The rumors of my demise are greatly exaggerated. Yes.
So thankfully we're on Facebook Live.
Okay, okay. So go to our Today's Issues Facebook page there and check it out. Walker will be posting the articles about the stories we'll be talking about today on this program. You mentioned the CIA. Appointee by President-elect Trump having his confirmation hearings today, right?
That's correct.
Tell me more. Do you know how much do you know about this gentleman? What's his name?
Pompeo.
I think it's Pompeo.
Pompeo.
I think.
Pompeo. Yeah. I've heard it both ways, and that's why I'm hesitating.
Yeah.
On this.
Pompeo. Pompeo and Pompeo.
Yeah. He's a Republican from Kansas. And well thought of, obviously. He's along the line in the fabric of the kinds of people that President-elect Trump has been nominating. And if there was any question prior to Election Day whether President-elect Trump would make good on his promises to bring in people well qualified for these jobs, that is being discounted very quickly. I was saying there's, besides that one, there is Dr. Ben Carson on housing today. But also, the one I was listening to just before I came into the studio was the hearing for Secretary of Defense, General Mattis. And he was being questioned by a Democrat. Now, Secretary of Defense, in charge of the security of the nation, pretty big platter. But the questions were about, are you going to allow homosexuals to continue to serve openly? This is the big deal for the Democrats. And by the way, what about women in combat? We really want to know about that. Are women going to be allowed? He had a great response to the women in combat. He said, when I was still serving, he's retired. When I was still serving, I had a unit of 23,000 people. And I had women, and these were women and Marines, and I had them on the front lines like everybody else. But then he kind of broadened his response to all of this by saying, the first responsibility I have is for the security of the nation. And anything that comes between that, that would interfere with that, I would have to deal with. He said, secondly, my job as Secretary of Defense is going to prepare these young leaders that are coming up through the ranks, these officers who are going to be leading in this environment where these policies are in place. And my job is going to be to train them and to listen to the difficulties that they may face so that I can deal with it, all with the purpose of making sure that we are secure as a nation. It was a great response.
Mm-hmm. Well, I tell you, the Obama administration created three crises, not related to the fact that it's hard for our military to field all of our Air Force wings without cannibalizing parts to get this jet up in the air. Set aside that. Set aside cutting the surface fleet, all that. But the social engineering that went on, three crises. One was the homosexual / transgender movement within the military. The second was the possibility of women being put into combat roles. And the third was the pressure on Christians in the military. Now, we haven't talked about that much in the last year or so, but we know that a lot of Christians were leaving the military because there was a lot of pressure put on them. You know, pressure put on chaplains in the military. Mm-hmm. The fact that members of the military sometimes were not allowed to have their Bible out, or, mm-hmm. you know, at some of the academies weren't allowed to post a Bible scripture outside their room. So those three areas, the Obama administration basically created some degree of chaos where there was none before. So tip of the hat to General James Mattis for stating that the first task is to protect this nation and its interests and carry out its foreign policy.
Yeah, you know what? When I think about the questions Mattis and even Sessions was asked yesterday, Senator Sessions, Jorge Ramos with Univision, I'm sure most of y'all know him, he was interviewing Ted Cruz back during the primaries, and he kept asking Ted Cruz about LGBT stuff, homosexuality, yada, yada. He just kept going on and on and on, and Ted Cruz was on to talk about his new book. Ted Cruz finally said, look, why are you so obsessed with sex? That's all you ask me is about sex. And so I think that, I know, giving a testimony in Congress is a little bit different than an interview, but that's all the Democrats talk about. Are you going to push homosexuality? Are you going to push LGBT stuff?
That's their obsession.
He's the Secretary of Defense. Mm, right. It's the military. That's not their job.
They don't care as much about... They wouldn't admit this. By they, I mean the liberals in the Congress. They wouldn't admit this, but they don't care so much about military readiness as they do about the social engineering mm-hmm. part of
it. And the Democratic Party hasn't since you probably have to go back to John F. Kennedy in terms of military readiness. The Democratic Party took a sharp turn to the left in the 1960s, and it's been this way all throughout the last 50 or 60 years.
Well, Fred, do you think they're going to try to stop General Mattis?
No, I think actually the hearings that are on today are not going to be quite as confrontational as what we've seen in the last 2 days with the hearings for Senator Sessions, for Attorney General of the United States, and also yesterday Rex Tillerson, the CEO of ExxonMobil, who is the selection by President-elect Trump to be Secretary of State. Yesterday, we had an interesting event occur at the confirmation hearing for Rex Tillerson. One of the most pointed and aggressive questioning came from a Republican Senator, Marco Rubio. You would have thought he was a Democrat, the way he went after Rex Tillerson yesterday. And I just wanted to play a little clip of that so you get an idea of what I'm talking about here.
Is Vladimir Putin a war criminal?
I would not use that term.
Well, let me describe the situation in Aleppo, and perhaps that will help you reach that conclusion. You are still not prepared to say that Vladimir Putin and his military have violated the rules of war and have conducted war crimes in Aleppo.
Now, those are very, very serious charges to make.
Mr. Tillerson, do you believe that Vladimir Putin and his cronies are responsible for ordering the murder of countless dissidents, journalists, and political opponents?
I do not have sufficient information to make that claim.
So there you have it. That was the tone of the questioning between Marco Rubio and Tillerson. Tillerson handled himself really well on that. Are you prepared, you know, basically to blame Vladimir Putin for everything that happened?
Yeah.
And he mentioned Aleppo there. And Tillerson comes back and says, I don't have any evidence that he personally, Putin, was responsible for all of this. And so he handled himself well, but there was a lot of talk yesterday and again this morning. Why did Marco Rubio do this? Why did he decide to take such an aggressive stance against President-elect Trump's selection for Secretary of State?
Well, I like Marco Rubio a lot. I think he would have been a good president. Mm-hmm. But that exchange right there seemed to me, unfair to Mr. Tillerson.
Mm-hmm.
Because Marco Rubio seemed to be trying to box him in before he's ever taken his job as Secretary of State, and have him go on record at saying something, for example, Vladimir Putin is a war criminal. Well, you don't want. You remember when Hillary Clinton went over to Moscow, mm-hmm. when President Obama took office and she was Secretary of State, and she went over to set the reset button? You remember,
right.
You remember that big
mm-hmm. right.
press
mm-hmm.
conference and that big deal? In other words, they were trying to start anew the relationship with Russia, because you don't want to be in a confrontational situation constantly with somebody like Putin or Russia. If you can avoid it, I'm not saying you sacrifice your principles in any way. I'm just saying it seemed to me a little bit unfair to try to make Mr. Tillerson say, you know, you say that Vladimir Putin is a war criminal, or either you're weak. You know, that seemed to mm-hmm. be the sort of indication. Again, Marco Rubio is a champion of freedom, and I'm sure he feels strongly about communism. You know he does. He came, you know, his heritage is in Cuba. But I don't know. That just seemed a little unnecessarily antagonistic to
me. And some of that may go back to the primary season, where Trump and Rubio and Trump and everybody, you know, clashed, and everybody clashed with Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And so there may be some of that. You know, the fact of the matter is, now during the Bush administration, sometimes people accuse us of always being one-sided. But I was on the air critical of the Bush administration. I thought the Bush administration was unnecessarily provocative to Russia and wanting to put missiles in Poland and all sorts of other things. You know, drawing a ring around Russia. Russia, through its history, has been very, very paranoid, frankly, about invasion, because it's been invaded so many times, going back to the Mongols and everything else.
That is going back.
It does. I mean, they because of the terrain, they've been invaded over and over again. The Russian people, I think, come from Viking stock. I mean, whoever was there first, the Vikings invaded. So they're very paranoid about that. And my opinion was we should try to draw Russia into a little bit more of a congenial relationship with Europe, rather than isolate them and take advantage of their weakness following the collapse. So I think that this is a good step on the part. I thought Hillary Clinton's step in trying to reset relations with Russia was wise. But now you still have a lot of Republican hawks, and sometimes it's important to be hawkish, but who still treat Russia as if they are communist. And, you know, if Putin is a bad dude, we should discover that and take the steps going forward. But I like the fact that Trump wants to try to make Russia less of an enemy and more of a friend. And I think he will. And we don't want a war with Russia. I mean, they may not be where they were when they were the Soviet Union. They got a lot of nuclear weapons, and mm-hmm. you just don't want to. You don't want to light a powder keg, and it's best not to create a powder keg.
I think Tillerson did a very good job because we knew going into the hearings yesterday he was going to be questioned a lot on Russia because he received some kind of friendship award as CEO of Mobil Exxon. And he's had a lot of dealings with the Russians. Mm-hmm. But he said he had a very, I thought, brilliant explanation. He said, we have to watch Putin. There's no question about it. But he also said this. He said, you have to put everything in context as to what is happening today. Mm-hmm. Soviet Union blew up.
Right.
The Soviet people are very proud. So along comes Vladimir Putin comes back into power again.
Right.
Remember, he had that vacation for a while, and then he comes back in, into power. And so he's instilling pride back in the nation again. Tillerson says, now we have to watch how he does that.
Right.
We understand, you know, from a point of view, if it happened to this country, you know, if we had this huge split. But he says he's trying to exert pressure again to put Russia back into play as a major power.
Right.
We will watch. We have to be vigilant about how he does that. But we can understand his motivation. He wants to bring respect back to Russia that has been lost. He felt has been lost. And so he said, we're going to monitor. We're going to be very careful. And he basically, Tillerson was saying, and I'm paraphrasing here, I'm not naive. I understand what's going on out there. But we have to be careful about making the accusations that Marco Rubio wanted to make yesterday, because that sets it way back.
We've pushed, listen, frankly, our antagonism towards Russia has pushed Russia towards China.
Yes.
You know, and they've done military maneuvers together, and you don't want two major powers like that conspiring against you. It's just not smart. If you're smart, you treat Russia with respect. You watch them because Putin is a cagey individual, but you try to split those two apart. Mm-hmm. You try to split China and Russia and play them off against one another rather than putting them in the same corner.
Well,
against
if Obama's
us.
This, if Russia's this big threat, Obama's had 8 years to deal with it.
Yeah,
and he waits until his last month in office to somehow sound the alarm that Russia's a big threat.
Right.
That's why. By the way, you're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. You're listening to American Family Radio. Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano, Walker Wildman, and Fred Jackson. We'll let you figure out who the voices are. you know what, Walker, to your point, you remember when, was it about 4 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, President Obama said that we have a red line in the sand in Syria, that if the Russians and the Assad, regime cross, then we will engage militarily. We will stop them. Isn't that what he said?
Mm-hmm. That's right. He was talking about he wanted the Assad regime ended.
Okay. Which, but then you remember the Russians and the Assad regime kept on doing what they were doing, and which was causing the loss of life of a lot of innocent people, true?
There's a civil war going on there.
Yeah, it's a civil war. The rebels, and sometimes you don't know who to pick. You've got a conglomerate of players there in that part of the world, and it's kind of like four or five gangs. Which one are you going to pick, to be on the side of? Who's right? Sometimes somebody's right, sometimes the other one's correct. But my point is, to Walker's point, and then President Obama did nothing there to back up his words. Mm-hmm. Don't say the words if you're not going to back them up. Then you have the situation with the, the pushing the idea that the Russians were involved in the political campaign here in the U.S. and had some trying to influence it. First of all, there was testified was it the CIA director or the FBI? The CIA director said, I believe it was him or the National Security Administration. Anyway. One of those top guys said that this had no effect on voting at all. There's no evidence that any vote was changed in America because the Russians did anything or not. Mm-hmm. But the narrative, of course, that's been promoted by the liberal media and the Obama administration is that, oh, my word, the Russians cost Hillary the election, and they must be punished. Mm-hmm. And so he sent the diplomats home, packing, right? Mm-hmm. Obama did, the Russians, and he's also sort of amped up the rhetoric. Excuse me for being cynical here.
I think this is more trying to create problems for Donald Trump by President Obama than it is any kind of principled stand by the president on this. I think he's just trying to create, how much of a mess can I create for Trump before he gets here that he'll have to worry, that he'll have to clean up with the Russians?
Right.
That's my...
Including sending 2,500 vehicles with the military into Europe, you know, some tanks and armored personnel carriers. Because
so it's all of a sudden it's Obama the hawk,
right?
In the last 3 weeks,
yeah.
I mean, it just does that strike you as in the way I see it?
Yeah, and you know, look, well, look, we have obligations to NATO. I mean, that's. We're either in or out. If we're in, then we need to do what we need to do to make sure that we carry out our obligations. You know, there's apparently some fear, in Latvia and Estonia and some of those places that the Russians might make a play there. And so I understand you want to make sure that Putin understands we're not going to tolerate that. But it seems awfully late in the game. Next week, you know, Obama's gone. Awfully late in the game.
Now he's a tough guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
It's
clearly political, and that's what makes the rest of us cynical. Because this does not appear to be a long-term foreign policy principle that he's acting upon. He's had plenty of opportunities if he wanted to, to punch Russia in the nose with sanctions. Mm-hmm. He's had plenty of opportunities, plenty of things. Things that Russia has done to do that. But he waits until a month before a new president, after he was clearly repudiated, President Obama, I'm saying, in the last election. Yeah. Nobody wanted a third Obama term represented by Hillary Clinton. Now he suddenly decides to get tough with Russia. I'm not buying it.
Yeah. Well, there was another interesting event in Washington yesterday, and this goes back to the Senator Sessions hearings. Senator Sessions to be the next Attorney General of the United States.
You talking about the Grand Wizard?
Is it Wizard or Dragon? I'm sorry, I'm not up on my KKK.
Oh, I think it's Grand Wizard.
Flow chart.
I think a Grand Dragon is. I don't know, maybe they got a dragon too in there.
I don't know.
It's Grand Wizard.
It's Grand Wizard.
Per Google.
When we're talking about just context here, accusations being made against Senator Sessions when he was Attorney General in Alabama. But yesterday, something historic happened. For the first time, and from what I understand, this is not media talk. This was verified by a historian. A sitting senator went yesterday and testified against a fellow senator who has been nominated for a cabinet position. This has never happened before. And in this case, it was Democratic Senator from New Jersey, Cory Booker. And he sat there, and despite the fact a year ago, and I think Fox News at least has played this, he was praising Senator Sessions for what a wonderful man he was. Yesterday, he takes the podium to denounce Senator Sessions, that he would not be a good attorney general, that he would not uphold civil rights, et cetera, et cetera. It was an amazing moment.
First time in history. That a senator, acting senator.
How long is this clip?
I don't have a clip of this.
Okay.
All
right, we're going to take our break then.
Okay.
Right here and come back and talk about this.
Yep.
Well, how can you praise a man, your colleague, a year ago? In fact, Senator Booker said it was an honor to work with Jeff Sessions, the senator from Alabama. And now you object to his serving as attorney general for, I guess, and basically calling him a racist, didn't he?
Yep.
Well, a lot can happen in a year, Tim. And part of
you can become Grand Wizard.
Part of what happened in that year is Cory Booker saw the writing on the wall and said, I think I could get the Democratic nomination
in
2020. Well,
you know what? Oh, there you go.
Yeah. You know what? If I were Jeff Sessions, I would have showed up yesterday. I'd have made Booker, who I've worked with, look me in the eye and call me a racist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he knows that's not true.
Yeah.
And we'll be back momentarily. Stay with us.
You can use this information right here.
Tim Wildman discusses life's most important issues.
So you could have a sea turtle alive out there right now that was here during the Civil War.
It's like getting a university degree. Kind of.
Tell the world.
Here's What's the question, Ed? How wide is the wingspan of the world's largest roach species?
Listen to the Trivia Friday edition of Today's Issues. Friday mornings at 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Trivia Friday.
Isn't it refreshing to have a president that isn't hostile to Christianity? Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman with the American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, our country was founded on the Judeo-Christian worldview. There's no question about it. The Christian religion was dominant in early America, and there's a reason our country was called a Christian nation. We're going to see this rich history when we go to Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon on our Spiritual Heritage Tour in June, and then the other one in September. In addition, we're going to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown on a separate tour, but you can do both of those tours with us if you would like to. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation will be our historian as he tells us about our great Christian heritage and history. For more information on either of these tours, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and commentary next. A radical California-based group wants Americans to boycott L.L. Bean because one of the board members supports Donald Trump. Grab Your Wallet also wants L.L. Bean to remove Linda Bean from the board of directors. Miss Bean is the granddaughter of the company's founder and a businesswoman in her own right.
We have to put a stop to it. We have to identify what it is, what they're doing, and call it what it is. It's bullying. It's bullying.
L.L. Bean says the company stays out of politics, does not endorse candidates, and board members can endorse whoever they want to. But that's not good enough for Grab Your Wallet. Not only is their boycott misguided, their demands are downright un-American. If you want to support a Republican, fine, support a Republican. The same goes for Democrats. It's nobody's business but yours. Grab Your Wallet has demonstrated, once again, the intolerance of those who preach tolerance. I'm Todd Stearns.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. You can get us on the internet at afr.net, afr.net. You can find a list of our stations across the country. How many stations we got, Walker?
184.
184 stations, and we just in the last few months upgraded our station in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, added Huntsville, Montgomery, Alabama, Lexington, Kentucky, mm-hmm. about 2 weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, and New Orleans, Louisiana.
New Orleans, I forgot about that.
Corpus Christi, Texas.
Yeah, soon to add
Jacksonville,
Florida. So we're growing. Wonderful. Oh, yeah. We praise the Lord for that.
Exciting.
Impact of American Family Radio, especially on just encouraging you in your walk with the Lord and also informing the Christian community about what's happening in our country and in our world so we can be edumacated Christians.
And get them active. We want people to be active. Do something.
To your point, it's also exciting in that along with providing news for 184 stations across the country, we have a growing number of affiliates. Now, these are other Christian stations in places where we don't have stations, in California and places like that, that are now taking our newscasts.
Wow, great.
That's great.
And that's really exciting.
Yeah. Absolutely.
To see the value out there.
Absolutely. Well, a week from
Tomorrow
will be the inauguration in Washington, D.C. of the next president of the United States. How many is this, Ed?
This will be, what,
45.
Bush was 43. Yes, that's right, 45.
This is
45.
The 58th inauguration, but 45th president.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So how does that work?
Two terms.
Yeah, or one term. FDR, three terms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh.
Well, actually, four. And he died in his fourth. He died in his fourth, right?
After that's when they said...
that's right.
Was it a constitutional amendment?
It was. Limited to two
terms?
Two full terms, I think. There's some squirrely thing about it, partial terms and...
This is starting to sound like Learning University, fellas.
Yeah, well, that's why we're here. It
sound like we're making this up as we go
along?
Yeah,
making this up.
I think I asked somebody the other day, you can't be president two terms, for example, like President Obama, sit out a term and then come back and run
that's
again.
That's right. That's mm-hmm. correct. But if you fulfill part of a term like Truman did with FDR after FDR died, then there's
run two more times.
Let me see. He came in. He won in 48 and I'm gonna have to go back and check. He won in 48.
Harry Truman, you're talking about
Harry Truman. So I'm gonna have to go check. I'm gonna check my history.
Well,
on that.
So for example,
52 was Eisenhower. So okay. I'll have to check and see.
So for example, had Gerald Ford won against Jimmy Carter in 76. He had already been in office 2 years as a result of Richard Nixon's resignation. He could have theoretically been president.
Ten years. I'm going to check on that. That may not be true.
Okay. Will you check?
So
on
this
that?
Does sound like Learning University now.
You just volunteered yourself.
Is that true or false?
You just volunteered.
I'm going to look that up. I'm going to look that up.
You're confusing people. They think it's Friday.
All right. All right.
Walker, we got a guest standing by, don't we?
Yes, we have on, well, first off, we have on Dan Steiner, who's the president of Preborn Ministry. Preborn, we've been partnering with them this week to provide free ultrasounds.
What was the word you just made up?
Preborn.
Parthenoning? Something like that.
Preborn.
Yeah, Preborn. We've been partnering with them.
Partnering with Preborn. Sometimes I talk too fast.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, even for a Southerner.
We have been partnering with Preborn. Okay. Is that better?
Well, no, it wasn't, but I'm sorry I haven't brought it up. But anyway, go ahead.
Hey, Dan, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you, gentlemen. It's a joy to be partnering here in this endeavor to save lives of little babies with AFR.
Tell us what your ministry does, Dan.
Really simple ministry nationwide, but very focused on two things. The first is giving young women that are considering aborting their children an opportunity to have a firsthand meeting with their little baby via ultrasound. We do that in two ways. One is we partner with great networks like AFR and asking listeners to underwrite ultrasound sessions for girls. And then also we place ultrasound machines, the actual equipment, in centers that don't have them. So that's part one is saving babies. The second one is even better, and that's leading the mother to a relationship with the chief executive officer of Preborn, which is not me. It's the Lord Jesus Christ. And so we're evangelists to abortion vulnerable women, and our centers lead the nation in the percent of women that come and accept Christ in center. We consider every girl that walks in a divine appointment, and our heart is that she would know the Lord.
You know, what percentage of these young ladies who see their babies on the ultrasound change their minds? They were going to get an abortion, but they saw that beating heart or they saw the baby moving, and that convinced them that they just couldn't go through with that.
It's dramatic. Ultrasound is a game changer, guys. If you try to talk a girl through our counseling into changing her mind as wanting an abortion, she may change her mind 40% of the time. But if you then walk her back into the ultrasound room and she has that close encounter of the best find with her baby, why 80% is the under-promise, over-deliver number. We, in fact, have had centers last year well over 90% conversion ratio.
Yeah.
On women that came in wanting an abortion and because of ultrasound chose life.
Hey, Dan, this is Walker. Tell us one quick story of a personal experience you've had with a young lady who's come in maybe being abortion-minded, and then she leaves there wanting to give birth to her child.
Well, we just had a recent one here that a couple came in, and they were young, and they just found out they were pregnant, and it wasn't in the plan. They didn't have the money. They didn't expect it. Here they are, and they're wanting to bail out of the pregnancy. They're wanting an abortion, and just they just don't know what to do. But they were looking for an abortion, and we talked to them, and they just, I mean, were just shocked by the fact that she was pregnant, and you know, they're millennials, they're young, and so counseling didn't do any good. Took them back into the ultrasound room, and there was a 12-week baby, little beating heart, and that beating heart changed their hearts just instantly. The girl started weeping. She said, "I can't believe this is inside of me." And the man says, "You know, we can't do this. We've got to make this work somehow." And they resoundingly chose life. So that's just one quick example of how it works.
All right, Walker, what are we doing to, what are we asking our listeners to
do? What our listeners can do is they can partner with AFR and Preborn to provide these ultrasounds to these young women. And here's the price breakdown. For $26, I believe that's right, or is it $28, Dan?
$28.
For $28, you can provide one free ultrasound to these young ladies. And so if you can call, here's the phone number, 877-616-2396, 877-616-2396. Or you can go online easily and securely and give a donation to, at AFR.net to provide these free ultrasounds to help partner with Preborn.
All right, go ahead and give that number again. And any of the, so any donation will help towards that effort by calling that number.
100% of your donation goes to strictly give these free ultrasounds to these young ladies. And the phone number one more time is 877-616-2396 or AFR.net. Hey, thank you, Dan, for coming on with us.
Hey, you know, it's a tremendous privilege to partner with you. You guys have already saved over 1,400 babies with your listeners. So I'm very thankful.
Amen. Praise God. Praise the Lord. Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it.
Be blessed.
All right, Dan Steiner joining us, president of Preborn Ministry. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano. Yes, and Walker Wildman and Fred Jackson.
Well, I did find an answer for our civics
lesson.
What was
the question?
The question was about a vice president fulfilling a partial term and then running again. And the fact of the matter is that according to the 22nd Amendment, which was passed in Congress after FDR died, and he died in 45. I'm going to read from a website. It says, the 22nd Amendment limits a president's number of terms to two. However, if a vice president takes over for a president with less than 2 years of his term remaining, that vice president is allowed to run for two more terms for a total maximum of 10 years served as president. This has never happened in U.S. history. Harry S. Truman, who was vice president under FDR when he died, took over after less than 90 days as vice president. So he fulfilled most of that, which would have been the fourth term for FDR, and that's why he was only able to run one more time for president. If he had served for less than 2 years as president, he could have run for two terms after that.
What's the idea behind limiting a president to two terms, you think?
Well, it gets an awful lot. FDR, you know, began to, he attempted to pack the Supreme Court and make all kinds of changes. So I guess the reasoning is that you don't want someone serving for so long, it becomes almost dictatorial in nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also, I don't think there are many men that can go beyond 8 years. To the credit, whether it's Democrat or Republican, you look at how Barack Obama has aged.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're right, boy.
I mean,
George Bush, they all age.
You're on duty 24/7, 365 days of the year. It's a tough, tough job.
Yeah, right.
Democrat or Republican?
I think it's healthy to bring in a fresh face.
It is
a fresh body every 8 years.
Oh yeah, and I agree with the idea behind it. I was asking, you know, you just can't. It's not healthy for our country to allow for somebody to be 12, 16 years, to be a. But on the other hand, the other argument would be, hey, man, we got elections. People want to vote them out.
Yeah.
They can.
What happens is with the executive branch is the president appoints all thousands and thousands of people, and even after 8 years, it's hard to really reel that back in. You see this with the Trump transition. You have all these judges, and I mean, you have thousands of people under your watch.
And the bureaucracy gets loaded with people who aren't going anywhere. They're lower level people, and they're career bureaucrats. Mm-hmm. And
well, the argument for limiting the executive branch to 8 years, that is the president, I think, can be applied to the Congress or the legislative branch.
How about the Supreme Court?
Although we're about to talk about something that will never happen, so I don't know the point. I don't really know the point. The term limits.
Ted Cruz. He's already introduced a bill.
Yeah.
To
I don't know whether it'll pass or not.
Yeah. Federal judges serve for life.
There's argument. Well, on the legislative side, the Congress and the Senate, there's argument both ways. To me, two terms as senator, six terms as in the House. That equals 12 years in either side. And then you can run for the other one. Mm-hmm. If you're a House member for 12 years and then you want to run for the Senate seat.
Right.
I don't have a problem with that. What's happened with our federal government is these guys get up there, and many of them have good intentions, but they get up there and it turns into a career,
yes,
for them. And then they get into then you get into who can bring the most bacon home back to the that's basically what it turns into.
And their prime motivation appears to be, how do I stay up here?
Yes. Yeah,
and that's
no,
that's
that is
all,
their yeah, prime motivation.
That's all about getting reelected.
And if that's your prime motivation, that's the wrong first priority for being a prime motivation. Mm-hmm. If these guys knew that they were limited to, as I would say, six terms as a House member, two terms as a senator, then you're up there first of all, when you run, you really want to go because you really want to serve the country. And this is not to impugn the motives of. Probably the vast majority of those guys have great motives when they go up there, but then it turns into, then you wake up one day and you're going, you've been there for 40 years. That wasn't the intention of the founders when we had representative government. It was for the farmers and the merchants and the, the preachers or whoever to go to Washington, serve our country for a few years and then come back home. But
we're talking human nature here, aren't we? You go up you go up there to serve the nation. Before you know it, you're up there to help yourself.
That's why a lot of them end up being Washingtonians. Mm-hmm. They don't. You hear these stories about representative or senator so and so hadn't lived in his home state since 20 years.
They become lobbyists and
I'm just saying that human nature is if you think you're going to, you know how it works.
I think we ought to scrap the whole thing and put me in charge.
I'm just saying if the principle for holding a president to two terms is to keep power from being
accumulated.
Then I would say it would be the same principle would apply to the legislative branch. But again, I don't know why we spend 5 minutes talking about something that's never going to happen because I think those guys – would be the ones who have to term limit themselves. Mm-hmm. Am I right?
Well, no. I mean, you can pass a constitutional amendment
on a state level
by bypassing.
That's not going to happen.
Congress, but you'd have to have a state.
Well,
state
no
conventions.
State. No state is going to be the first to do that.
Well, now let's remember, both Ted Cruz and Trump are both for term limits.
All right, I want to see if Ted Cruz term limits himself.
He's proposed the bill.
Well, I want to see if he does it himself, and that's when he proves.
If he votes for his own bill,
that's when Trump.
No. If he said whatever Ted Cruz is suggesting, I'm a great fan of Ted Cruz.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I'm saying if Ted Cruz,
volunteer,
then sign up for it. Then when your term is up,
impose his own rule on himself.
On himself.
Okay,
that's what I'm saying.
But I think he might do that if Donald Trump appoints him. To the Supreme Court, where he will remain for the rest of his life.
Will he only stay for 8 years, though, in that court?
And that federal judges for life, too, is... Yeah. Anyway, that's... you got to think back. Some of these things, probably when the Constitution was written and then the idea of the federal judges, including the Supreme Court, would have lifetime appointments. Again, the idea behind it is good. That is, you take them out of the political arena.
Right.
All right. The bad part about that is you take them out of the political arena.
Yes.
Because they're not accountable to anyone for any reason for the rest of their life. And you get people who are 80 plus years old up there falling asleep during the hearings and nobody can do anything about it.
Right.
Because they have lifetime appointments. And, well, in the 1700s, a lifetime appointment was 42 years old. That was a senior citizen. You know what I'm saying? Now people live in end of their these justices
live to 120, like yeah. Justice Ginsburg.
So I don't know what you do about that. Maybe you do some kind of
dog years.
Driver's test or something like that. I don't know.
Oh, we're insulting people now, left and right. Or I mean, Tim. Tim's insulting people.
Hey, Mr. Clarence Thomas, can you meet us at the DMV this afternoon?
We're going to do our driver's test.
Makes you qualify to serve on the highest court.
We're going to jog around the Supreme Court and see if you can make
well,
it.
Well, I might fail that one.
A fitness test.
It's a civics discussion. Yeah. There are people learning like crazy right now. I'm pretty sure.
Of course, we are micro-criticizing the founding fathers of the United States of the country, of America.
Yes, we are. Well, what they created was a genius system. Yeah. Never been anything like it in human history before, and I don't see how it can be improved on in the future. Mm-hmm. And freedom and liberty are a rarity in world history, right, Ed? Am I right?
Well, it is a rarity in human history.
Before the American system came along, basically, the constitutional republic, representative government, states' rights. Of course, that's shot.
Yeah.
States' rights for the most part. But I'm just saying that local government before that, we basically had kings, right?
Well, you had the Greek city-states where democracy really was born. You did have the Roman Republic. There were some Native American tribes, the Five Nations, the Iroquois Nations, I think. They had some kind of rudimentary form of democratic representation. But the Founding Fathers studied all that, and they said there seems to be a lifespan limit to democratic endeavors. Hmm. We want to try to figure out why and then how to mitigate against that. And that is what they came up with the sharing of powers, you know, kind of scattering the powers a little bit, having checks and balances, having the federal system where you had shared power, and that was supposed to counterbalance so you wouldn't have the kinds of flaws that led to the end of Athenian democracy and things like that.
And then along came the pen and the phone.
And then, that's right. I have a pen, I have a phone, I'm going to do what I want.
Right.
We got to get a few last shots in on the Obama
administration. Well, he's the one that started that. Of course, you know, if Congress won't do it, I'll do it myself. Basically, the attitude that he took. Of course, several of those big strokes of the pen that he had as executive orders were struck down.
Yes.
By the federal
and
courts.
If you live by the sword, you die by the sword. You a stroke of the pen might just eliminate some of those.
I found it amusing that President Obama, doing an interview a couple of weeks ago, was warning President-elect Trump against using the executive order. Did you not find that?
Oh, yes.
That was laugh out loud.
I found a lot of that.
Well, Trump kind of responded to that yesterday.
Did he?
He was asked about when you're going to deal with a particular piece of legislation. He said, well, here's what's going to happen in the first several days. He said, we're going to take the weekend off after the inauguration next Friday. Going to take the weekend off, party, blah, blah, blah. He says, Monday morning, I'm going to be busy signing executive orders. And I'm going to do that Tuesday, and I'm going to do that Wednesday, I'm going to do it Thursday and Friday. And then maybe the next week we'll get on to other things.
Well, those executive orders mostly are to rescind
Obama's
executive. You know what's interesting? I just looked up a number of executive orders that Obama signed. And, I mean, there are others that have signed way more than him. But I'm going back to the founding. George Washington only signed 8 executive orders. Mm-hmm. John Adams only signed 1. And James Madison signed 1. James Monroe signed 1. But you get into Franklin Roosevelt, Woodrow Wilson. Franklin Roosevelt signed almost 4,000 executive orders. Obama signed...
That's 5 a day. I don't even have time for lunch. Good night. You're kidding me. 4,000?
It was an automation machine. They just slide the paper through.
Of course, he had 12 years or so.
President Obama signed 266.
If FDR signed 4,000 executive orders?
The internet doesn't lie, Tim.
Oh, yeah, okay.
This is a university report.
Okay, and President Obama signed how many?
266, which in comparison to even Bush and Clinton is not more.
Well, it's the problem. The problem with President Obama's executive orders is a lot of them stretched, challenged, or violated the Constitution.
Right.
I mean, he went far. He just decided he would make himself laws. you know, instead of going through the, that's what he, that's, they're not going to make laws, I'll make laws.
Right.
Remember that? So that's part, and, you know, the fact that he was able, President Obama, to get away with it in a lot of respects, a constitutional attorney and his constitutional scholar, Jonathan Turley
yeah.
from Georgetown University. I've watched him a lot. He's a liberal. He said, I voted for President Obama.
Right.
He said, but President Obama is just violating the Constitution flat out with these executive orders that he is putting forth, which are law. They have that net effect of law that he's made up, which is meant for the Congress
right.
to do. And so that's been one of the big criticisms of President Obama is the lawmaking through executive order. To your point, Walker, about that. That's mm-hmm. what his defenders will say. Well, he hasn't signed nearly as many as these other presidents. Well, right. they haven't been as extensive mm-hmm. as President Obama's reach with his executive order.
I may be wrong on this, but I bet you Obama's going to have the records for the number of pardons.
You think
there's
so?
A lot of talk about
commuting
that.
Sentences.
Yeah.
Who's he going to commute?
Oh, he's been
well.
Commuting.
We don't know yet, but. Yeah. The concern is that he's going to.
That's every president's prerogative, though, isn't it? An outgoing president. So you're going to have these guys who are in prison,
right?
Mm-hmm. And he without explanation.
Yep.
He could. I think one of the ideas that was kicked around was that he might a lot of low level drug offenders. He could just commute them all, and have them released.
Yep.
So you think is that?
I have no idea whether he will, but that's...
no, he's shown us his cards to a certain extent. The number of pardons that he has done in the last 2 years,
right,
has been absolutely incredible. Wait. And then, of course, talk about Gitmo, another 18 he's supposed to release in the next 8 days.
Yes,
I mean there's going
to
be about
to
20,
me that's
20
scandalous.
Left.
That's scandalous. That it's not even talked about hardly anymore.
Nope.
And that is talk about commuting sentences. Just get out of jail free card for Gitmo.
Mm-hmm. These are the worst of the worst, the last, whatever, 30, 35
yep.
that are in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba.
It's been well documented that many of them have gone back on the battlefield.
There was a report this week that said that they're tracking these guys and they're gone back into being terrorists.
I will never understand the mind of President Obama on this one. Why the obsession with letting terrorists out to go out of Gitmo? What is the... What, you've mentioned this before, maybe the drive. What's the driving motivation for that?
Well, I mean, I can't say for sure, but the left has always, they've had a propensity for siding with the criminal as potential victim, having rights violated.
Yeah.
Rather, that's how Richard Nixon got two terms. Mm-hmm. In large part, I mean, there was some blowback, you know, because of the 60s and, a lot of the protests and... when he was reelected in 72, overwhelmingly, part of it was because of the Vietnam War. But there was a tough-on-crime, difference between the two parties.
Mm-hmm.
Because you had the soft-on-crime Democrats always worried about the rights of the criminals. The Republicans were always concerned about the victims. And that, really, that difference has existed, and I think that's what... President Obama's thinking these people are victims here. They should have been tried in U.S. courts.
Right.
And since they won't do that, and I'm sending them back, what are the chances of them hurting an American citizen? Not much. That's, I think, his thinking.
Mm. Mm. All right. Well, we shall return momentarily with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. 5 minutes of news straight ahead. If you want to watch the show or listen on the internet, we're at Facebook Live. Our Facebook Live is activated at today's issues on our Facebook page. You can send us an email at comments@afr.net if you'd like to. comments@afr.net. We will be back with more in 5 minutes. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.